Broadcasting.
Good afternoon. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. It's Thursday, May 6th. Could we have a roll call, please?
Representative Levy.
Present by video.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh is here by video.
Representative Smith.
Rep. Smith is present.
Yep. I'm sorry. Can you not hear me?
We didn't hear you. Sorry.
Oh, sorry about that. Yep. I'm here. Present by video.
Thank you.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama present by video.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham is present by video.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke present by video.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson present by video. We have several items on our agenda today. I hope to cover them in the order in which the agenda is printed. We're starting with the public hearing. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 3275A. LRO.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, this is Jamie McGovern for the Legislative Revenue Office. House Bill 3275A exempts the land owned by eligible covenant holder that is burdened by affordable housing covenant, requiring permanent affordability from ad valorem property taxation. And the improvements on the land must constitute owner-occupied housing. And then, in addition, 27% of the real market value of the owner-occupied condominium that is on that land would be exempt from ad valorem property taxation. And that's a rather short bill, the 3275A. And then the dash two just gives, there's a lot of clarifying terms of what that covenant means and specifies termination conditions and clawback provisions. And I think that's what I have. And we have some representatives here to talk about that.
Committee, any questions for LRO before we start with our witness list? I don't see any. We have four people signed up to testify this afternoon. I will say the names in order. Please, for those witnesses who are with us, please keep your camera off and your microphone off until we call on you to testify. And then please do remember to turn your camera on along with your mic. It will be Representatives Con Pham and Mark Meek, followed by Diane Lynn and Kristen Carter. First, Representative Pham.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Reschke, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Con Pham, representative for House District 46, and I am really honored to testify as a chief sponsor today for House Bill 3275. First of all, I just want to say I'm a huge fan of community land trusts. I think that they're really important strategies to keep housing permanently affordable, and I think we need to do everything we can to expand our toolbox of what we can do, because we know that we're facing a huge housing crisis right now in Oregon. Right now, across Oregon, there are organizations like Proud Ground and Habitat for Humanity who provide affordable homes for sale to people with moderate to low incomes. And these nonprofits offer down payment assistance grants, technical assistance, and other support to bring homeownership within reach for Oregon families, many of whom come from historically underserved communities. So I'm honored to bring this bill forward in collaboration with these partners that serve as a bridge to homeownership for many families across the state. So new developments and down payment assistance grants are often established using the community land trust model, in which a nonprofit owns the land underneath the homes, and that way they can ensure that this will be permanently affordable. And this is especially important to support people of color and working class Oregonians who can utilize these programs to overcome well-documented structural barriers. So House Bill 3275 provides us the opportunity to make critical improvements that will remove barriers faced by these homeowners and to create incentives to increase the utilization of these models across the state. This bill would reduce tax payments for low and moderate income homeowners and extend the process that some counties have already adopted of creating an option to exempt the land underneath the houses for homeowners who've purchased a community land trust home. Because they own the land, but ultimately they're not benefiting from the increase in equity of the land. And so this would make sure that they're not actually paying property tax on land, that they're not benefiting from the appreciation and value. We're excited that this passed unanimously in the House Committee on Housing as one tool to help address our current affordable housing crisis. We've continued to engage with a broad group of stakeholders on this bill, including the Department of Revenue, county assessors, counties, and homeowners. In particular, we've had productive conversations with county assessors to ensure smooth implementation of the changes proposed in this bill. We're very appreciative of the feedback that we've incorporated into the Dash 2 amendment to clarify the process for claiming exemptions and aligning with best practices for implementation. I firmly believe that we should seek to address our housing crisis while also laying the groundwork for home ownership. We have to seek innovative ways to encourage home ownership and address the barriers experienced by communities of color and other underserved communities. This property tax exemption is an effective and necessary tool to incentivize and support more permanently affordable home ownership opportunities at a time when Oregon urgently needs them throughout the state. Therefore, I urge your support for House Bill 3275, and I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Representative Meek, are you with us?
Yes, Madam Chair. Chair Nathanson, Vice Chairs Pham and Reschke, and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Mark Meek, and I'm the state representative for House District 40. And I do appreciate the opportunity, and I do appreciate the work of the chief sponsor, Rep. Pham, in support of 3275A. As a real estate professional and as somebody that's helped many people purchase their first homes, sell their first homes, move up, and move out, it's been quite an experience. I have 25 years of experience now, and one of the great models of entry-level home ownership is through these programs, through Proud Ground and some of the community land trust models. And one of the keys to affordability is the ability to keep the expenses down. When somebody purchases a home, they have to qualify based on the principal of the loan, the interest, well, principal repayment, interest payment, and then the taxes and insurance. And if the affordable home buyer is paying for the appreciation of land that they will not appreciate in the future, I think it's kind of a counterproductive of what we're trying to accomplish. And so this bill and this concept, while seems small, will be very instrumental in both helping the community land trust to keep their expenses down because they're providing perpetual affordable housing, and then the tenants, the owners, well, I'm sorry, the actual leasehold improvement owners, or improvement owners, I'm sorry, will be able to continue the affordable homeownership journey. What I really like about all of these community land trust models is that when we talk about inclusionary zoning and other types of housing models to provide and bring affordable housing in, we can't guarantee that those homes will remain or stay in the affordable housing markets. This tool while the owner will have a chance to sell in the future, gain that appreciation, sell it to another affordable home buyer, and continue the model, and then they can use that appreciation to move up and into a more established kind of a traditional type of home. So I really appreciate the work that Rep. Pham has done on this and the brilliance behind the model, and I look forward to hopeful approval and passage of House Bill 3275A, and I'm happy to answer any questions too. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Meek. I'd like to move on to our next two witnesses who have signed up, if that's all right with the committee. Not seeing any hands go up right now. I'd like to call on Diane Lynn, please.
Good afternoon. Hello, Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Ruschke, and the members of the committee, and a very special thank you to the co-chair, Rep. Con Fun, and a special thank you again to Representative Mark Meek for explaining the bill so well today. And thank you all for your leadership and service to the state of Oregon. My name is Diane Lynn. I'm Executive Director of Proud Ground. I'm a former elected official at the county level, so I appreciate your jobs especially. Proud Ground is a 501c3 organization that serves families in Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas, and Lincoln County. We also serve Clark County, Washington. As has been explained, we create permanently affordable homeownership opportunities for first-time homebuyers through education, counseling, development, asset management. We bring public resources to fill the gap between how much a family can really afford in a mortgage, can qualify in a conventional mortgage, and what it actually costs on the market. And as all of you know, the costs are going up and the inventory is just historically low right now. So these models are so very important. We have 375 homes in our permanently affordable portfolio, and we've served over 550 families. We work in very direct partnership with Habitat for Humanity, especially the Portland region. So all of their new homes to lower income families, they target a 30 to 60% level average median income. Those homes are also permanently affordable in our portfolio. And we work hand in glove with the wonderful teams of people, not just in the Portland region, but around the state to sustain permanent affordability, because the investment made in those homes need to really support the community's long-term affordability and assist the family in wealth creation and stability. That's so very important, especially BIPOC families, Black, Indigenous, people of color. Half of our homes are owned by people of color. Our strategic goal is to achieve 75%, and we did that last year. We'll do that going forward. Habitat's very high in terms of their targeted audience. And again, these are families who were literally shut out along the way, and I'm sure you've all heard the stories about that. Across the state of Oregon, nonprofits, again, not just us, but other, both CLTs, Community Land Trust, and Habitat, and other agencies, affordable housing agencies, provide these opportunities. It's time really to codify this practice that has been already achieved in Multnomah, Washington, and Clackamas County, where the homeowner pays only on the value of the improvement, the home, and not on the value of the land. Those are practices that have been really applied, but they really haven't been codified by state law. So if a new assessor came in, they could do what they wanted to do. And this bill really not only takes the really wonderful practice of this, what we believe to be fair taxation on shared equity homeowners statewide, it also codifies a practice in the three major counties, largest counties of the state. So we are, again, as Rep. Fawn suggested, we've been working in partnership with the county assessors. They're the ones that need to implement this. We already have relationships with the ones in the larger counties. And we have approached assessors in counties like Lincoln County, and they really have kind of wanted to defer to the state about this. So this bill does exactly that. And we have are happy to make the minor changes that the assessors have suggested. We have all along, and there's one last change we'll make to the final dash amendments. And we're also happy to answer questions about the impact on community. Like I said, I've been involved in local government here in the Portland area for 4 years, and I want to admit, and we do want to be conscious of the importance of tax exemptions and how they're applied. It's complicated and layered, as we all know, and we want to be very careful to understand the impact on the local jurisdictions. We have been in communication with both the League of Cities and the Association of Oregon Counties. Commissioner Claire Hall from Lincoln County is vice chair of our board and is former president of ALC, has been very actively involved in this particular effort. In fact, was sad not to be able to join us today. She did testify at the House Housing Committee. I have more statistics on the specificity of what we think the actual impact will be. I'll save those. If there are questions about that, I'm happy to answer them. Again, we really think we've reached the sweet spot of a very thoroughly drafted bill. Again, thanks to the leadership of Rep. Fawn on this one. And we're happy to answer questions, and I'm anxious for you to hear from our wonderful homeowner and board member in just a moment. Standing by to answer any questions anyone may have. Oops, I think you're on mute, Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Lynn. I heard you mention an amendment. Does that mean we will be looking for something beyond the dash two that we have?
I believe one word is to be added after, if you pass this bill forward, which we're hoping you will do, because we're asking for support. As we all know, the session's waning on and we need to get it to the Senate side. There'll just be one word added in the final amendment. I believe that's the plan.
So the question was, are we expecting another amendment? And so, yes, we're expecting one more amendment after the dash two. And are you working with Legislative Revenue Office also to make
yes.
sure that everyone's on the same page?
Yes, we are.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you. The next witness is Kristen Carter.
Can you guys hear me? Okay. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kristen Carter, and I am a Multnomah County homeowner through Proud Ground and also a board member. And I wanted to share my story a little. A little over 10 years ago, I was a single mother, and I was trying to beat the statistics against generational poverty. I have two children with disabilities, and we are a multifaceted BIPOC family. And I stumbled across Proud Ground. It was the only way I was going to be able to afford a home. The home that we got through Proud Ground has opened up so many doors for my family. The children have been able to remain stable in their schools. They've been able to remain stable in their therapies, and they are excelling tremendously. We've become active members in our community. Just in December, my oldest son graduated valedictorian, just simply because of the stability he had in his home and being able to pursue the schools that could provide him proper support. We have become small business owners, and we're just really proud of everything that Proud Ground is doing. The affordability piece is something that is so difficult to explain to families who may not have faced those levels of poverty. Even during this pandemic, I did not have to worry about whether or not I could afford my home and whether or not my children were going to be homeless. And that was priceless for us. I've shared previously that we've had other family members who have become homeless. This home alone has kept several children from being out on the streets. So our home means a lot more to us than some numbers on reports and things like that. It's a safe place for not only my family, but so many others. And being able to keep that stability for my children has been the most important thing that I could offer them, especially coming from several generations of poverty myself. We were able to break that cycle.
Thank you, Ms. Carter, for your testimony. Could you turn, someone's got a mic on. Thank you. I want to congratulate you on your success, and also to the congratulations to the student on the student success. That's really good news. Very good news. Committee, do you have any questions for our witnesses today? I'll wait just another couple seconds. I don't see any. Thank you all for being with us very much. Ms. Lynn, Ms. Carter, and also Representative Spham on that side of the table, and Representative Meek. Committee, any other comments or questions before I close this public hearing? All right, the public hearing is closed on House Bill 3275. And now, before I move to our work sessions, Mr. Alanak, you have some information for us. Occasionally, we ask questions about the status of revenue impact statements. Can you please fill us in on the nuts and bolts, the logistics of how those are prepared and when they're posted and all of that stuff?
Sure, Madam Chair. And this gets highlighted. I've gotten a couple of questions, but also looking through the five work sessions today, as the members, you'll be able to see some variation in the revenue impacts. So I just wanted to touch on a couple things there in anticipation of questions. One, our primary goal with the revenue impact statement when it's final is that we have a description, and then we actually have a table in there that shows the revenue numbers. It kind of highlights what the impact is by biennium, as well as the first biennium is broken up by fiscal year. And then we have some text describing how we came up with that estimate. And that would be a final revenue impact statement. Some of the statements, when we're still working on them, you'll see a watermark on there that says further analysis required. And we refer to those as light statements. And the watermark on there is really meant to be a flag for all stakeholders reading the statement. A key thing to know is that a bill cannot go to the floor with a light statement. So that just flags for everybody that if it says further analysis required, it can't go to the floor. We have to fix something in the process. And in terms of moving through the process, we can put a light statement to get it from one committee to the next. Some statements you may have seen will be very sparse, and there'll be something on there that says this is literally just to enable the bill to move from committee A to committee B. That means the economist hasn't had any time to look at it, but it's moving forward in the process. Other times, and I think you have a couple today that we might refer to as a heavy light, that might be some of the slang that we use, and you have that watermark and a lot of text. And that's because while we have looked at it some and we can say something about it, maybe we have some preliminary numbers. We might even have that table. But again, that watermark is to flag, okay, the economist still has some questions. We're still reaching out to people. We're still working on it one way or another. And with all of the bills today, because they're going, the intent, as I understand it, so we'll see how it plays out. My understanding is that they'll be going to JTAX, or the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. So some of them will have that watermark and there'll be light statements, and that's because we expect further work. Some of them, if the economist feels that they're pretty much done, they're not using that so-called light statement. So just in looking at all these, once you, certain questions pop out when you can look at things side by side, and I think that might have been coming up today. So Madam Chair, I just wanted to mention that to folks.
Thank you, that's very helpful. Appreciate having the information, and I'm glad we did it in our public meeting, because that will help other people who might be looking at the materials understand the status. So, committee, we are getting ready to do some work sessions. Unlike yesterday's bills that we were referring to the House and we were asking for carriers, people to carry the bill in the House, the bills we're doing work sessions for today will be referred to Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. And speaking of lingo, sometimes it's called JTAX, and sometimes you'll see the initials JCTE for Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. That's the same thing. JTAX and JCTE are all the same thing. So I'm ready to start work sessions. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2096A.
Hey, good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And the House Bill 2096A, we do have a dash A2 amendment as well, but this is relating to the existing agriculture workforce housing tax credit. The committee heard testimony on this, and this is increasing the limit that's in existence right now on the tax credit. So under current law right now, the number of tax credits that can be issued, there's an annual limit of 3.625 million. And the change in House Bill 2096 is increasing that amount. The introduced version would increase that amount to 24 million per biennium. Now the dash A2 is making that change 16.75 million per biennium. And this is in line with testimony received in the previous hearing. The 24 million was really just a math error. So the request coming from housing does chew up with that 16.75 million. So this is at their request and in line with the testimony you received on their desire to increase the credit limit in line with what they think the demand is out there for the credit. In terms of the paperwork and building off of Chris's introduction, we do have the fiscal impact. It is a minimal. The revenue impact statement issued is a revenue impact light statement, but this is probably one you'd consider a heavy light. And in some ways, it was simply given the light statement in that it is going to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. So in many ways, the numbers, we wouldn't expect much of this to change. But if there are questions that come up in this committee or in the joint committee, it would give us the opportunity to perhaps add any clarifying information to the revenue impact statement going forward.
Thank you. Committee, any questions for Mr. Easton before we start working on this bill? Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Easton, just real quick, so it's from 3.6 or 675 million to 16.752 million per year. Are both those numbers annual, or is one of those a biennial number?
Yeah, Representative Reschke, that is part of the trickiness of this. So thinking in an annual number, existing right now is 3.625 million. And then we are going to a biennial cap, but if you think of it in an annual amount, that would come out to 8.375 million, okay. Or an increase of about 4.75 million per year. And part of the reason of the request for the biennial as well is that gives a little more flexibility in how this credit would work for housing community services. So if they have a little more demand and say 1 year of the biennium rather than the second, they could front load that a little bit, if you will.
Thank you for that clarification.
Anything else for Mr. Easton before we start working on this? I don't see any new hands. The beaver paw went down. Representative Pham.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I move that the dash A2 amendment to House Bill 2096 be moved to 2096A.
Thank you. Vice Chair Pham moves dash A2 amendment to House Bill 2096A. Any discussion on this amendment? Let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes yes.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes yes.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2096A as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Thank you. Vice Chair Pham moves House Bill 2096A as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Discussion on the main bill now. Any discussion? I'm not seeing any. Roll call vote, please.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes aye.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes aye.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. That completes our work on this bill, 2096A. So I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2096A, opening a work session on House Bill 2584A.
Chair Nathanson, oh.
Yes. Pham.
Thank you, Chair Nathanson. I move the Dash A3 amendment to House Bill.
Rep. Pham, first I'd like to see if LRO had anything to tell us about this. But thank you. Stay there.
Yeah. Madam Chair, did you want any information specific on the amendment or just the general background on the bill and the amendment together?
The bill with the amendment.
Okay, very good. So yes, House Bill 2584, we do have the Dash A3 amendment. This is a bill relating to the Affordable Housing Lenders Tax Credit. And in this case, it's again, similar to the previous bill, it's making a change in the credit limit that exists in law today. So right now there is a $25 million limit on the credit, and House Bill 2584 would be increasing that to $35 million. The way this limit works in some cases is kind of a more of a revolving limit. So it tracks with the amount of credit that is outstanding at the given time during the fiscal year. There are a number of other changes being made to the bill as well that are predominantly going to be, I guess, changes that are aimed at increasing the efficiency or aligning the credit with some federal provisions as well related to to housing. The Dash A3 amendment, the committee did have this in the previous, during the public hearing. This comes from Representative Fahey and would expand the qualified purchase of bonds to include such qualified bonds issued on behalf of housing authorities, so not just the Oregon Housing Community Services Department. Again, this is aimed at, in some ways, increasing efficiency in cases of potential points at which the Oregon Housing and Community Services could run into, I guess the way this has been described is pinch points, really, where the housing authorities might be able to release some of that pressure by running these bonds at the same time. So it could release a pinch point here on the Affordable Housing Lenders Credit. Again, we do have the paperwork on this one. The fiscal is minimal. In this case, the revenue impact statement is a light statement. We are still working through in some cases to better understand where we are right now today with the amount of credits that are outstanding and how close we would get to running up against the credit limit. And this is described a little bit in that light statement, but again, increasing the credit limit in this case, there may be an impact if that credit limit is limiting the amount of credits that can be out there right now today. And currently we are under the limit by about $10 million. So this really would be a perspective look going forward of, do we think we're going to hit this limit in the coming years? And in that case, lifting the limit could have a potential revenue impact in that it would allow more credits in future years that would otherwise be constrained by the existing $25 million limit rather than the $35
million. Okay, Representative Reschke.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Easton, so you answered one of my questions was, where are we at with the cap today? And it sounds like we're about somewhere about 15 million are being taken. And so we're gonna go from 25 to 35 million. LRO going to do any analysis of kind of the trend where we're going that would show that that is necessary, or that we're going to bump against the $25 million cap? I'll be a yes today, but I just want to make sure, because we're going to JTAX, but I think that'll be helpful in that committee to discuss further kind of the trend and to see whether we need to push this forward or not. Thanks.
Yes, Representative Breschke, that is definitely what we're looking at right now. I'm working with the Housing Community Services Department as well to better understand. In some cases here, you could have a baseline forecast, but then there could be perhaps an upside risk of exceeding the cap limit, and better understanding, well, what are the chances that we could actually exceed this limit? Is that a likely scenario, or is this really a just-in-case type of race? But yes, we will have more information on that in the Joint Committee, absolutely.
Thank you very much.
Thank you both. Any other questions for Mr. Easton before Rep. Pham makes her motion? I don't see any. Rep. Pham.
Chair Nathanson, I move the -A3 amendment to House Bill 2584A.
Vice Chair Pham moves -A3 amendment to House Bill 2584A. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Roll call vote, please.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes aye.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes aye.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Breschke.
Breschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. Rep. Pham.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2584A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Thank you. Vice Chair Pham moves House Bill 2584A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Is there any discussion? I'm not seeing any. Roll call vote, please.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes aye.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes aye.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Breschke.
Breschke votes aye.
Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. There's no other business on this bill for this work session. I'm closing the work session for House Bill 2584A. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2737.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2737 is a measure that would create a personal income tax subtraction from federal taxable income for amounts received as AmeriCorps National Service Education Awards. This would apply to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2021. We do have the paperwork on this one. The fiscal is minimal. The revenue impact statement, you can see in OLIS, we are expecting this to cost about $200,000 per biennium. One note additionally on the revenue impact statement, because House Bill 2737 does not specify a sunset date, ORS 315037 would come into play here, and that is the implicit sunset statute. So this subtraction would receive a six-year implicit sunset, which would take effect then on January 1st, 2027.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Easton? And I'm going to wait just a moment because it looks like Representative Smith it might have had a technical issue, and we're making sure we're connecting with him all right. Representative Smith, I want to make sure that in case you needed to ask a question, you have an opportunity. Otherwise, I'm ready to take a motion on this bill.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 2737 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Thank you. Vice Chair Pham moves House Bill 2737 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Any discussion? Not seeing any. Roll call vote, please.
Representative Levy.
Levy votes aye.
Representative Marsh.
Marsh votes aye.
Representative Smith.
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. That completes the work on this bill. So I'm closing the work session on House Bill 2737. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 3244.
Okay, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3244 is making a change to an existing one of Oregon's two existing auction tax credits. In this case, it's making a change to the auction tax credit for the Film and Video Office or the Oregon Production Investment Fund. So the change in House Bill 3244 would be increasing the amount of the auction tax credits available in a fiscal year from the current law of $14 million and increasing that to $20 million. Again, this is for the film and video or the OPIF auction, and it would apply to fiscal years beginning on or after July 1st, 2021. In terms of the paperwork, we do have the fiscal. There is no impact on the fiscal side. On the revenue impact side, we have issued a revenue impact statement. Again, technically it's a light statement, but this is, again, another one of those that you could consider a heavy light statement. It does reflect this increase in the amount of auctionable tax credits. And one thing to note, two things of note on the revenue impact statement is the first is the assumption is that the auction will be successful. So we will be able to auction the full amount of the credits. And this is based upon a look at the most recent current auctions that took place in the last year and the results of those. One of the things that was raised is that there is one other auction tax credit, the Opportunity Grant Fund credit. And potential concern that as the film and video auction has traditionally gone before the Opportunity Grant Fund, there is a potential that in some ways if the opportunity or if the OPIF auction is increased to $20 million, that could then have a negative impact on the success of the Opportunity Grant auction that is usually held a few months following. Again, our thinking right now in the revenue impact statement is that the full allotment of the credits will be successfully auctioned. It could possibly take Opportunity Grant a second auction to reach that. But that is the thinking right now, but wanted to make you aware of it. And then one other reason why this was received a revenue impact light is that there is another bill in JCTE, the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures, that would extend the sunset of the film and video auction tax credit. So there are two bills, and if you extend the sunset and then you expand the amount of credits that are available to auction, those two could work together to influence the revenue impact statement, which in this bill just does take into account that the credit is scheduled to sunset under current law.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Easton before we start working on this bill? I'm ready for a motion.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 3244 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Thank you. Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 3244 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Any discussion? I'm not seeing any, although I do see some variation in a couple of the microphones. Are representatives Levy or Marsh trying to get in? Okay. I'm not seeing any discussion. Let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes aye.
Representative Marsh?
Representative Marsh?
Madam Chair, this is Greg. I've been kicked out several times here in the last 5-10 minutes.
Yeah. Let's come back to Rep. Marsh. I see a connection, but maybe there's a problem. Let's come back. Go on to the next member, please.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama?
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham?
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke?
Just want to make sure my tie looks good for my casting picture. Reschke votes aye.
Chair Nathanson?
Nathanson votes aye.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes aye. Thank you for coming back to me.
Thank you. The motion passes. No other business on this one, unless Representative Reschke wants another chance at a photo op while we're on this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, but I think one is probably more than enough.
Okay, someone already got the screen grab, I guess. I'm closing the work session on House Bill 3244. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 3364.
All right, Madam Chair, the last bill on your list today, House Bill 3364, is a bill that would create a new income tax credit available to taxpayers that are a seller of publicly supported housing in Oregon, and they make a qualifying sale, which is essentially keeping that publicly supported housing in continued use or future use for similar purposes, low-income housing. The amount of the credit in this case is an unspecified amount, so there is still a blank in the introduced version of the bill. We do have the fiscal impact that is a minimal, and the revenue impact statement in this case is a light, reflective of work ongoing and the need to designate a credit percentage.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Easton? I'm ready for a motion.
Chair Nathanson, I move House Bill 3364 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures.
Thank you. Vice Chair Reschke moves House Bill 3364 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Is there a discussion? Rep. Pham, did you have anything?
Sure. I just wanted to say that I'm happy to co-sponsor this with Rep. Zika. I think that this has a clear benefit for protecting affordable housing in this time of housing crisis. And yeah, I'm really happy to see bipartisan support for this measure.
Thank you. Any other discussion on the motion to move House Bill 3364? Let's have a roll call vote.
Representative Levy?
Levy votes aye.
Representative Marsh?
Marsh votes aye.
Representative Smith?
Representative Smith votes aye.
Representative Valderrama.
Valderrama votes aye.
Vice Chair Pham.
Pham votes aye.
Vice Chair Reschke.
Reschke votes aye.
Madam Chair Nathanson.
Nathanson votes aye. Motion passes. There's no other business for this bill, so I'm closing the work session on House Bill 3364. Mr. Alanak, anything else to tell us about before we close the meeting?
No, Madam Chair.
Committee members, it looks like we are done with our agenda. Any final comments? Okay, I'll see you at the next meeting. Thank you all. We're adjourned.